Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
In the upper 40s. Right now, 47 degrees in Nashville at 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kasher.
And I'm Peter Sagal. What do you do if you're a millionaire running for the president of a country mired in recession with millions of people struggling to pay their bills, and every news cycle brings another story about how rich and out of touch you are? We'll ask which candidate realized he needs to learn to relate to the average voter, so he's going to buy one. Plus, Duke Fakir of the Four Tops helps us put the mo in Motown, and Carl Kasher explains he did not mean to cut in line at the It's a Small World ride.
I tripped, and I ended up in one of the boats. That's how I found myself there.
We'll ask Aurelia trouble with navigation right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. Joe Paterno, the fabled Penn State coach and snared late in life by an assistant coach's scandal, has died. He was 85. Paterno's victories included two national championships and heading into his 46th season. Although he had been well over 80, he said he wanted to keep working.
Good, solid program. I want to be able to get up in the morning and know I've done the best I can to figure out we're doing it the way it's supposed to be done.
But as NPR's Jeff Brady reports from State College, Pennsylvania, Paterno's storied career came to a startling halt amid an assistant coach's personal scandal.
A written statement from Joe Paterno's family reads, quote, "He died as he lived. He fought hard until the end, stayed positive, thought only of others, and constantly reminded everyone of how blessed his life had been." Around this town, Paterno is known by the affectionate nickname Joe Pa. Last night, fans gathered for an impromptu vigil at the football stadium where the longtime coach won so many games. In November, Paterno was fired as head coach in the wake of a child sex abuse scandal, but students and Penn State fans prefer to remember him as a beloved coach who cared deeply for Penn State and this community. Jeff Brady, NPR News, State College, Pennsylvania.
Emerging from a strong victory in the South Carolina primary, former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich says his hardline conservative views make him the only candidate who can deliver a GOP victory.
The last thing Republicans want to do is nominate somebody who collapses in September. Beating Barack Obama has to be the number one mission of the Republican Party. A second term for Barack Obama will be a disaster for this country, and I am committed to beating him.
Gingrich spoke on NBC's Meet the Press. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, who finished second, says now that he will release his income tax returns.
I will release my tax returns for 2010, which is the last returns that were completed. I'll do that on Tuesday of this week. I'll also release at the same time an estimate for 2011 tax returns.
He spoke on Fox News Sunday. The Arab League this weekend talks about the status of its observers in violence-torn Syria. Details from NPR's Lourdes Garcia-Navarro.
One of the criticisms of the observer mission is that basically these observers were thrown in there. They had very little training, no logistics support. Even though the actual observers on the ground are a pretty impressive bunch, they're in a tough spot. On the one hand, the pro-Assad people dislike them. Whenever they're moving around inside Syria, they get their cars trashed as they drive through. On the other hand, when they go to towns, the opposition expects them to stop the violence. And frankly, that's not their mandate. They're observers. And so what the opposition is saying, this is a toothless mission, and it's not helping at all.
NPR's Lourdes Garcia-Navarro. This is NPR News. Italian divers have found a 13th body on the capsized Costa Concordia. Authorities say the woman was wearing a life vest and was found in the rear of a submerged portion of the ship by a team of fire department divers. The search of the wreckage continues, but choppy waters are limiting the search to the above water section. China is reporting its second bird flu death in a month. As NPR's Frank Langfitt reports, the Chinese case follows recent deaths in Vietnam and Laos.
A 39-year-old man has died of avian influenza in a hospital in the southwestern Chinese province of Guizhou, according to Xinhua, China's state-run news service. This is the second recent case of its kind in China. On New Year's Eve, a bus driver died in the southern Chinese city of Shenzhen, which borders Hong Kong. More recently, Vietnam reported a bird flu death last week, a man who worked on a duck farm. And a 2-year-old boy died in Cambodia last week as well, following contact with sick poultry. Chinese officials insist improved treatment and monitoring can avert an epidemic in the world's most populous nation. Since 2003, 343 people have died from bird flu around the globe, according to the World Health Organization. Frank Langford, NPR News, Shanghai.
England's Ascot Racecourse is apologizing today after a dust-up with high-dollar customers over proper dress. Ascot requires men wear a suit jacket and tie in the premier enclosure. Every person who ignored the dress code had a small orange sticker affixed to his outerwear. Racegoers were outraged, and now Ascot has apologized, offering a full refund. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Fox Theater in Detroit, Michigan, Peter Sagal.
Thank you all. Thank you so much. It is so great to be here in Detroit at the fantastic Fox Theater. We have got for you today, we have got Duke Fakir, one of the original Four Tops. He's going to come by and talk Motown. But this is a great time to be in Detroit. The Tigers and the Lions made the playoffs, right? The Red Wings, they got a streak going. And General Motors, well, they're not a sports team, but they're almost as important. They regained their place as the largest car company in the world just this week. In fact, you know, some people started to worry because Detroit would not be Detroit if everything was successful. But don't worry, we're here now. Give us a call to play our games. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name's Mary Ellen. I'm from Melrose, Massachusetts.
I know Melrose. How are things in Melrose?
They're lovely.
And what do you do there?
Right now I'm an unemployed librarian.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, how are you spending your time then?
Spending a lot of time at home, knitting, looking for a job.
A librarian who knits.
Yes. I'm going for all the stereotypes.
You're doing well.
How's your cat doing?
I have two.
Mary Ellen, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning who will be appearing in his own cooking channel special called My Grandmother's Ravioli on Sunday, February 19th. It's Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mary Ellen. I've got a stack of books in my apartment. Can you come over and organize them?
Sure. How much are you going to pay me?
Oh, that. Right, yeah.
Next, it's a humorist and the author of the audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 years of comments and comic pieces available to download near you. It's Michigan's own Tom Baudet.
Hello, Mary Ellen.
And finally, a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Ms. Faith Saley is here.
Hi, Mary Ellen. Hi, Faith.
Mary Ellen, thank you so much for being with us. You are going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time, Carl Castle, right now. We'll recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, explain or identify two of them. Do that, you win our prize. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Your first quote is from a man
who made $362,000 giving speeches last year.
Oh, I can get speaking fees from time to time, but not very much.
That was someone who was questioned about his finances this week. Who thinks 300 grand is not very much?
That would be my former governor, Mitt Romney.
Yes, indeed, Mitt Romney. Well done. Mr. Romney had a bad week. First, he stumbled over whether or not he would release his tax returns. What was he hiding? Some people say it would be his 15% tax rate or his, as we found out, offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands. In his defense, Romney said he was not using the Caymans as a tax haven. Well, then what is his money doing there? Well, Mitt Romney is so rich, even his money gets to go on vacation.
Strapped to the roof of his car.
Exactly. Mitt's bad week continued. It turns out, whoops, he didn't really win the Iowa caucuses. Rick Santorum did. And Newt Gingrich started rising in the polls in South Carolina. Gingrich did this by kicking around Juan Williams at last weekend's debate. That thrilled the Republican crowd. Williams said he was okay with the rough treatment, but now it does make him nervous to get on a plane with somebody dressed like Newt Gingrich.
So does this mean for the Iowa... Does this mean that when we look up the Iowa caucuses for 2012 that Mitt Romney's name will have an asterisk by it?
Yes.
That he's like the Barry Bonds now
exactly,
of the Iowa caucuses.
But no matter how bad things got for Romney this week, his opponents kept trying to help him out. One of Newt Gingrich's ex-wives did an ABC News interview and said he asked her to have a, quote, open marriage so that he could have a wife and have a mistress on the side. Gingrich defended himself. He says, look, even back in the late 90s, he was trying to create jobs.
Hmm. See, this whole, that is a spectacular development. I thought that Newt Gingrich was against open borders, but I guess it's not the case.
Oh, borders, not boundaries. Yeah.
And then at the debate Thursday night, Newt went after the moderator again. He called CNN's John King, quote, close to despicable for asking about the open marriage thing. He then asked John King if they could bring in a third moderator, quote, maybe Katie Couric. Just see what happens. Mary Ellen, very good. Here is your next quote.
I had tripped, and I've ended up in one of the boats. That's how I found myself there.
That was... That was not Mario. That was a sea captain. That was a sea captain explaining how he suddenly ended up in the lifeboat sailing safely away from what?
From the Italian cruise ship.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
The Italian cruise ship. The captain of that ship, Captain Francesco Schettino, may have personally transformed a lovely cruise off Italy into a disaster movie, but he is making up for it since with his sense of comic relief. At first, passengers were told that nothing was wrong with the ship, nothing. The boat is not lying on its side. You're just all really drunk. Then Captain Schettino decided he could best oversee rescue operations huddling in a lifeboat. You heard his excuse. He tripped and happened to fall into a lifeboat, which then went away from the wreck. Seriously, that is what he said. Weirdly, he also tripped into the boat in such a way that he ended up hiding under a blanket, dressed as an 8-year-old girl.
You know who's really loving this?
Who?
Captain Joe Hazelwood.
He's in. Finally.
Apparently, the ship hit a reef at, say, 9:45.
Yeah.
And he ordered dinner with his Moldovan chippy at 10:40. He ordered dinner from the chef on the ship.
Really?
Yeah, they were just going to tuck in and have a little bite before he tripped into the boat.
He had a Moldovan chippy
yes,
with him?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She is 27 years younger than he is, and they were just sharing dessert, presumably.
So he got the women and children.
He did. First the women. Here is your last quote.
Student warning, do your homework early.
That was the founder of what site, often used for research papers, which went dark in protest this week?
Wikipedia.
Yes, and not just them. A lot of websites, including Google, Boing Boing, and the invaluable I Can Has Cheeseburger site, either went black completely or put up banners protesting two bills called SOPA and PIPA. which purport to stop intellectual piracy, but opponents say would censor the internet. Where could Americans turn in this dark day Wednesday for poorly sourced information? Or cheeseburgers they can has? People were so desperate they were breaking into their own basements to find their dust-covered encyclopedias in their shelves, pulling them down and maniacally stabbing words with their fingers, hoping to get information. Oh no, this book is broken!
Well, you'd think it could put Mary Ellen back to work at the library.
I know.
At least today.
Yeah. No, All right. Here's the thing, though. It worked. Immediately, senators and congressmen backed down. It's the first real successful civil rights protest of this century. Historians are unable, though, to identify the Rosa Parks of this movement, because without Wikipedia, nobody knows who Rosa Parks is.
That was a dark day. Wednesday. Yeah.
It was a great day, though, for know-it-alls. You could say anything. Nobody could pull up their smartphones and
fact-check you.
You can be like, well, Mickey Mouse in the original films was anatomically correct. Prove me wrong. Carl, how did Mary Ellen do in our quiz?
She was perfect, Peter. She's a winner.
And well
done. Because she had three correct answers. So
yay!
You win our prize.
Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Faith, you can update your Facebook at your computer in the bathroom even while driving through a school zone. Well, a new app just out will allow you to post a status update even when you are what?
Gosh, what's worse than doing it while you're going to the bathroom? Giving birth.
No, I bet
status.
I know
what
it is.
Dying?
No, even more than dying.
Oh, when you're dead.
Yes, indeed. Don't worry. Facebook fan, just because you've died doesn't mean you have to stop boarding your friends on Facebook.
I'm decomposing.
It's like...
Oh. Well, the new app is called If I Die, which really should be called When I Die. It allows you to compose a final message that will be posted after your ultimate demise. It's already a success, though a large number of the submitted final messages are just, look at the lunch I would have been eating today if I were alive.
Wow, and how long can this go on for?
I don't know, but the real question is, how does the app know that you died? And the answer is, it just knows. If you haven't checked your Facebook page for 45 minutes, you must be dead.
Wow, what if you could have... Sorry, this is so... Well, it is a morbid topic, so there's no way not to be morbid about it. But if you could bring, like, your iPhone into the casket and it could hear what people are saying when they come to your gravesite and post that, like, through some voice recognition thing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I actually never really liked them that much. And then, could, you know, like 3 weeks later. So
the technology is there.
You can embed it in the gravestone. People
That would be great.
Yeah.
I would just say, I heard that.
An automatic response.
Good.
An automatic response. That's great.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, offering tools to help guide customers through the car insurance process from quote to claim. Learn more at eSurance.com. Pimsleur Language Program, providing 30-minute daily lessons from a choice of more than 45 languages. More at Pimsleur.com. And the National Association of Realtors and Advocate for Homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Cullen Murphy about his new book, God's Jury, on the history of the Inquisition. Some of the interrogation techniques used today got their start in the 13th century.
What today we would call the good cop, bad cop, that's laid out by the medieval inquisitors in exactly the same way.
Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, South Carolina Speaks, we go to big Democratic Party thinkers for their take on how the 2012 race is shaping up. Plus, the year of the dragon is upon us. We'll look at China's ancient astrology and its very real-world modern impact on Chinese New Year. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You're on 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 47 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Faith Saley, Mo Rocca, and Tom Baudette. And here again is your host at the Fox Theater in Detroit, Michigan, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much, everybody. It's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Andy Foran. I grew up in Birmingham, Michigan, but I am now living in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Wow. You moved to Fairbanks. Because you couldn't stand the weather here in Michigan, you moved to Fairbanks.
Yeah, it wasn't quite dark or cold enough.
But... I understand. Well, welcome to the show, Andy. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Andy's topic?
After the break, I'll sing you the news.
These are tough times for local TV news teams. Reporters standing in front of burning buildings just don't cut it. And there are so many kittens to watch on YouTube. Well, this week our panelists are going to improve the local news. They're going to read for you three stories of a serious effort somewhere to fix the news broadcasts. Guess the true story, you will win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right, first let's hear from Tom Baudette.
WOOL-TV in Kalamazoo was in trouble, and news director Kathy Miskard knew it. Whether it was the dancing Hooters weather girl, the manly man stalker van, or WOOL's pull the wool over your eyes ski mask promotion is anyone's guess. But it was enough for her to fire the entire news team and staff and start over. And by over, she means 1960 and the heyday of television news. I sensed people were hungry for a time when you could trust the news and the people who delivered it, said Mitzgerd, who hired Walter Cronkite and Chet Huntley lookalikes. She changed the broadcast to black and white, had the anchors read copy from papers in their desks, touch their ears every so often and say, "This just in," even smoke if they wanted. We hired the meteorology professor from Michigan State to do the weather, Mitzgerd boasted, because she knows her stuff and looks kind of like Edward R. Murrow. Results are mixed. Viewership is up in the demographic of people who voted for Eisenhower, but still flat among those who think that's an interstate freeway.
All right. Going back to the 60s. In local news in Kalamazoo, Michigan, your next story, the change in the news, comes from Faith Saley.
Quick, think of the easiest job in the world. President Obama's anger management trainer. Okay, sure. But how about weather forecaster? Because no one expects you to be right, just tan. Until now. A new bill passed by the government of South Africa punishes forecasters whose weather reports turn out to be wrong with fines of up to almost $630,000 or 5 years jail time. South African politicians say this bill will preclude undue spending on emergency evacuations and protect the public against unnecessary panic and hauling in of patio furniture. Now in the forecast for savvy and law-abiding meteorologists are weather reports that go something like, "Good day, Cape Town. It could rain tomorrow. Maybe. Maybe not. I'm not really willing to go out on a limb here. I've got a family to feed."
All right. In South Africa, prison time for inaccurate weather forecasts. Keep them honest. Your last story of a revolution in local news comes from Mo Rocca.
The news is so negative these days. That's the kind of complaint Andrew Tuckfeld, news director at WHTN in Huntington, West Virginia, was tired of hearing. "Look, some news stories end badly. No way around it," he said last June. Well, that was then. This past month, WHTN News added the first ever Choose Your Own Ending feature. Last Tuesday, for example, the 11 o'clock news began with a high-speed chase down I-40. Before the end of the story, the anchor asked the audience to call in and vote for how they'd like the story to resolve. A, the driver is safely apprehended. B, the driver escapes on foot to Kentucky.
see, the driver is buried underneath a 14-car pileup. And sure enough, just before the newscasts end, the audience saw the most popular choice acted out. It was D, the driver surrenders to sexy state trooper Cindy Snow, and the two begin passionately making out right in the middle of I-40. Quote, "It's a great audience-empowering way to end a newscast," says Tuckfeld. "Besides, does anyone really need to know how a car chase actually ends?"
All right. Here are your choices. From Tom Baudet, a station in Kalamazoo, Michigan, going back to the model and look of the great 1960s newscasts. From Faith Saley, a new policy in South Africa where if you don't predict the weather correctly, you will go to jail. Or from Mo Rocca in West Virginia, choose your own ending newscasts. Which of these is the real story of an improvement in broadcast news?
Well, I'm a 27-year-old guy with a PT Cruiser, so I want to hope that there are enough people like me who want to go back to the way they pretend the 60s were.
So you have nostalgia then for something you have no memory of?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I want to see the 60s.
Okay, so you're going to choose then Tom's story.
Absolutely.
The fake 60s newscast and the black and white video and the cigarettes and the rustling paper.
That's it.
All right. Well, we spoke to an expert on this topic to talk about the real story.
In the past, people have reported that there was going to be a tornado or something like that, and those things didn't happen. So they're kind of afraid that someone is going to unnecessarily create panic.
That was John Blatt. He's a reporter for Mother Nature Network and Scientific American, talking about the new policy in South Africa to punish meteorologists for bad forecasts. So obviously, as good an idea as Tom had, and I agree with you, it would be cool, it's not true. Faith had the real story. You earned a point for Tom with his excellent idea, but you did not win our game. Thank you so much, though, for playing.
Thank you so much.
And now the game where we reward a lifetime of achievement with about 10 minutes of silliness. It's called Not My Job. Duke Fakir was a high school student here in Detroit back in the 50s when he started performing with three friends. That was the start of the Four Tops, one of Motown's biggest acts, with their hits Reach Out, I'll Be There, Baby, I Need Your Lovin', Bernadette, many others. Duke is still singing, still in Detroit. We are delighted to have him here. Duke Fakir, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you
what
so
an
much.
Honor. An honor to have you.
Thank you.
So,
thank you, Peter. First of all, it's really a joy to be here.
It is great. Yeah. It's a, everybody's having
a good
time.
You know, you guys are really hilarious.
Well, thank you.
You know,
So let's do like they do in the comic books, the origin story. You were a high school student near here
right,
in Detroit.
At Pershing High.
Pershing High.
Pershing High, Doughboy.
And
any Doughboys out there?
All right, we got one.
All right.
And you started performing with a friend of yours in high school.
Exactly right.
And you were like doing what? After school dances? You were.
Well, you know, I've just enjoyed singing all my life.
Yeah.
You know, I sang in all the choirs in church and all the choirs in school as I grew up.
You and your friend, who was that first?
Levi Stubbs.
You and Levi.
Yeah. We started it. Yeah.
And two more.
Mr. Ronaldo O.B. Benson and Lawrence Payton.
Okay.
And what? Now, we were at Pershing High. Levi and I were very popular because I was an athlete and everybody knew he could sing. But we always liked singing in a group. Now, there was a girls' club called the Scheherazades. They were giving a party, like a dance party. And the criteria to be in this girls' group was you had to be really... Okay? So they were giving this party.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't really go there to sing. We went there for what guys go to the parties for,
right.
You know? Right. Well, just so happened that when we did sing, everybody knew Levi was the lead singer. So,
right.
So in the middle of the party, the little young lady said, "Hey, Lee, is that a quartet you got? You guys want to sing?" So he said, yeah. So he said, "Y'all just back me up." So he started singing a song we all knew. And we started backing them up, and our voices blended perfectly well.
Oh,
wow, really? You know, I was singing first tenor. Lawrence just started singing second tenor, and O.B. Benson started singing baritone bass.
I got to say, having heard that story about that party, I think about lyrics like, "Baby, I need your loving, got to have all your loving," and I take them a lot more literally than used to.
I wish we knew that song then.
I bet. So tell me about, you were there in the heyday of Motown. You went from Chester to Motown.
We went from Chester to Columbia and then to Riverside. Yeah. And all the while, Motown was starting to grow. So Berry Gordy had seen us on a Tonight Show. We were working out of New York. So he had his A&R director, who knows us quite well, to get in touch with us. And at that time, we were thinking about how we could get in touch with Berry.
Right.
So it really worked out. I mean, we rushed back to Detroit and sat down and made a deal. Whatever deal he offered us, we was going to take anyway. Because we knew that's where we was going to, that's where we should be. And that was the kind of deal he made. He just promised us hit records.
And he did it.
And he did it.
It was pretty crazy there, I'm told, in the heyday. People were working, everybody was competing to get the next song out.
Once he put us with Holland, Doge, and Holland.
You're the great songwriter.
They were great songwriters.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, to be honest, I call them the greatest tailors of music in that day. Because they would have, like, one week they'd have the Vandellas in there, and they would tailor make a number one or a top 10 hit for them. The next week they'd have the Supremes in, tailor make a song and production top 10 or number one. Then they would have the Four Tops in the next week. The next week they'd have Junior Walker. And they wrote these songs specifically while you're sitting there sometimes just for you, just for that. And when you walked out of there, you had a top 10 record.
Well, tell me how that happened for you. For example, like a song like The Same Old Song, one of your hits. How did
The Same Old Song came about after Sugar Pie Honey Bunch, Can't Help Myself. Can't Help Myself was probably, it was one of our biggest hits. That had Reach Out. Well, it had been on the charts number one for 19 weeks. So when it fell from one to five, Berry Gordy came in the studio and started screaming, "We got an anchor. It's number five with anchor. We don't have another record to follow." And we said, "Oh, you're right." So he said, so he told Holland, Doge, and Holland, he says, "Look, this is Thursday. I got to have a record, and I got to have a record on the tops by Monday." So Lamont Dozier and I went out, and we, you know, had a few drinks. We was feeling quite good. And he was feeling just a little better than I.
Right.
Lamont Dozier. So I said, "Look, man," I was driving, and I said, "Let me take you home." So I went to his house. He said, "Come on in for a minute. Let's have a nightcap." I said, "Okay, baby." So we had a nightcap, and we was talking, and as usual, he just went to his piano and he started tinkering around. He was playing Can't Help Myself, but then he started playing it backwards, same chord, just playing. I said, "You know, that sound like that same song that we just..." He said, "What'd you say?" I said, "It sound like that same song we just recorded, Can't Help Myself." He said, "Same song." He said, "Okay, Duke, I'm fine, I'll see you later." And I went home. The next day they called us, come to the studio. Friday, they had recorded a track called The Same Old Song, a rhythm track by the Funk Brothers. We sang the song, they mixed it. Sunday, they called us into the office to stamp label copies. Monday, it was on the air. We was all stamping.
You had to go in there and stamp your own labels?
Why not? Are you kidding? Yeah. You get it on the air by Monday? Yes.
You think Eminem does that? He goes in and stamps his own?
It was on the air. And it was,
that's amazing.
It was on the air Monday, and we had a hit by Tuesday.
Wow.
So, just like that.
So The Same Old Song is actually The Same Old Song.
That's the same old song. Backwards.
So, Duke, you have a lot of swoon-worthy songs, right? So when you were dating, when you did want to court somebody, what was your go-to song that you would sing to her?
"Baby, I Need Your Lover."
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but would you? Great. But wait a minute. You need the other three tops to come with you on the date to make it work.
No. That's the only time I could do a solo.
Well, what a pleasure to talk to you. But Duke, what? We have asked you here to play a game that today we are calling...
You are one of the four tops. Now it's time for three bottoms.
Seems to make sense.
Oh,
we
sense.
Got three questions for you about different kinds of bottoms. Answer two of them.
I can answer all of those.
I bet. We have three questions for you about bottoms. Okay. Carl, who is Duke Fakir playing for?
Duke is playing for Ronald Bazman of Brighton, Michigan.
All right, you ready to do this?
Okay.
Yeah. Here's your first question. The Bottom is the name of the capital of the tiny island of Saba in the Caribbean Netherlands. The Sabans also demonstrated their genius for naming things how? A, there's a desert on the north side of the island called the Big Damp. B, the favorite food of the island is something they call gut fruit. Or C, the one road on the island is called the road.
So?
One of those things is true.
The road.
Yes, you're right. The road. The road on the island of Saba is called the road. Okay. It was built by a guy who took a correspondence course in engineering. It's quite a ride, we're told. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Next question. Sometimes bottoms play a role in history.
Most times.
Oh, yeah. You've seen some historic bottoms in your day, I would imagine. But this is a bottom that sort of had a role in world history. It happened recently. It was at the bottom of Governor Haley Barbour of Mississippi. He decided not to run for president because he said his butt gets numb in long meetings. Was it the butt of Saddam Hussein? A British soldier stole the butt of a statue of him and came home with it. Iraq wants it back. Or C, relations between Israel and Palestine were briefly improved some years ago when Shimon Peres butt-dialed Mahmoud Abbas.
Number three.
You're going to go for number three. Do you have a problem, Mo? Is something wrong?
I think he should reconsider.
Do you want to reconsider? I cannot vouch for Mo. I can tell you that he's sincere in his desire.
I just like the way number three sounds.
All right, I understand that.
Okay. I'm sticking with it.
He's going to stick with it. Well, Mo was right. In fact, it was B. It was Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, Saddam Hussein's butt.
Okay. Last question. President William Howard Taft had the biggest bottom of any president to date.
Yeah.
As a role in his legacy. According to legend, A, he claimed his bottom would tingle whenever he should veto a piece of legislation. That's how he knew. B, his butt was too big for a chair at a baseball game, and when he stood up to stretch, he began the tradition of the seventh inning stretch. Or C, what was then the square office became the oval office because he needed more room to turn around.
I like B.
You're going to go for B, the seventh inning stretch? Is that your choice?
Yeah.
Yes, that's
yes, it.
That's
yeah.
the story. The fact is that Taft became the first president to attend a baseball game and throw out the first pitch. Yeah. The legend is that he started the seventh inning stretch by standing up at the seventh inning to relieve his cramped condition.
William Howard Taft was so large, he had a bathtub built in the White House that could fit four men.
Ooh. Or one Taft.
Right, exactly. There's a picture of the four,
four
guys.
Bottoms.
For four bottoms.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
There you go. Carl, how did Duke do in our quiz?
Well, Duke had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Ronald Bass.
Well done. Hey! Congratulations. Duke Fakir is one of the original four tops. You can find him on Twitter, Facebook, and you can see him perform in Bloomington, Illinois on January 21st at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Duke Fakir, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure. In just a minute, Carl puts on his skinny jeans in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Reputation.com with tools to monitor and protect the online reputations of doctors, lawyers, and business professionals. Learn more at Reputation.com. The Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at MelvilleTrust.org. And CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Online poker all but disappeared in the U.S. after some high-profile scandals last April, but now states are looking to online gambling to help defray budget deficits. Will it pay off? Also, pop culture critic Renee Graham pays tribute to R&B great Etta James. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of news and culture here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
In the aftermath of South Carolina, the surviving GOP candidates move on to Florida, a big state with 10 media markets and an important contingent of Hispanic Republicans. I'm Armin Alney. On To the Point, then it's Nevada, another state hard hit by the Great Recession. We'll look at the prospect next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You're on 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio. Coming up in about 20 minutes at noon is the Splendid Table. Right now, the time is 11:39. It's 48 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Faith Saley, and Mo Rocca. And here again is your host at the Fox Theater in Detroit, Michigan, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl performs his Motown classic, I Heard It Through the Grape Rhyme, in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Mo, foreign relations experts have spent decades trying to quell tensions between India and Pakistan to no avail. Well, finally, someone has a fresh, new idea to improve relations between the two countries. What?
I mean, I just think of curry. I don't know. I mean, I need a clue. Between India and Pakistan.
It's like Top Chef Waziristan.
Oh, they're going to have a cooking competition.
They are. They're going to have a TV cooking competition.
Okay, all right, good. Yeah.
Very good. You approve? No, you're... Yeah, sure. All right. Yeah. Think of it as a special episode of Iron Chef, say, where the chef's secret weapon is an actual nuclear weapon. The show's called Foodistan. That's both the name of the show and the kingdom Chris Christie hopes to rule over someday. Anyway, the show brings together 16 chefs from India and Pakistan to highlight the nation's shared passion for food, because the best place to put people from two nations with a history of violent conflict is a room with open flames and a wide selection of knives.
That actually sounds like Thanksgiving with my family.
Tom, questions are being raised about the security of the prison facility at Guantanamo Bay after what was found in a prisoner's cell.
Oh, it was like a Jihadi Today or something. It was a Jihadi magazine.
Yes, it was actually a copy of Al-Qaeda magazine called Inspire. We've talked about it on the show before. Inspire is sort of the Al-Qaeda version of Cosmo. It has articles like 42 sex tips you would be publicly stoned for trying.
It makes me... Inspire does sound so lofty, right? Mm-hmm. It makes me think of the Oprah magazine. You know how she's on every single cover and has been for 10 years.
Right.
You just think Inspire has, you know, like Osama bin Laden, he backlogged all these different months of, like, you know, he's on a swing for May and, like, he's skiing for January.
There's a woman's corner in the magazine. It's just one page, and it says, if you're reading this, you should not have learned to read. Tom, Rick Perry withdrew from the presidential race this week. He also gave up his idea of flying to the moon by holding a bunch of balloons all at once. Nothing's working out for him. Perhaps the killing blow to his campaign, that final straw, came when he took questions from voters at a restaurant in South Carolina this week, a restaurant called the Squat and Gobble, what it's called, and he called on who?
He called on Newt Gingrich staffer.
No.
I need a hint.
Well, he must have been drawn by her stillness. Her extreme stillness.
A mannequin.
Yes, he called on a mannequin.
Oh, my God.
It was the most humiliating thing to happen at the Squat and Gobble since the patrons realized they were eating at a place called the Squat and Gobble. Actually, to be fair to Perry, one last time, he was most likely joking as he called on the plastic woman with her hand permanently raised at the back of the room, but it got pretty serious when the mannequin trounced him in a policy debate moments later.
What if the mannequin had turned into Kim Cattrall.
Maybe that's what Mr. Perry was hoping for. Mo, last month, Iran, as you probably know, shot down a top-secret American surveillance drone, and the U.S. wants it back. Well, this week, Iran said they'd be happy to send us what?
A fruitcake? They'd be happy to send something in lieu of a drone. They'd be happy to send a picture of the shot-down drone.
You're getting close. Not a picture of the drone.
A souvenir. They're going to send a little plastic drone,
exactly,
like from
right.
a gift shop.
They're sending a toy model of the drone, they said. The 1/80th scale toy drones are for sale in the streets of Tehran at about $4 each. It's not the first time Iran has made toys out of an international incident. We all remember back to 1979 and the Jimmy Carter in action figure.
Mm. And I love the little Ayatollah plush toys.
Oh,
the
they're hilarious. When you press his belly, he issues a fatwa.
Yeah, death to America. They really sent a Fisher-Price drone.
Well, they offered it to someone.
They're going to.
Actually, but you know what's going to happen? It's going to show up at the CIA. They're going to have an analyst open it. He's going to look and says, oh, my God, Iran has a shrink ray.
The drones should come with a Jihad Joe.
But that's what we should do.
That would be fun. A Jihad Joe would be great.
No.
With a veiled Barbie. With a chador.
Mm-hmm. We should send a box of action figures to go and get the drone back. You know. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank. But first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website at waitwait.npr.org. And there you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. You can also download the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to look like Crispin Glover. Somewhere in America, someone went, finally, the secret! Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Lauren. I'm from Tampa, Florida.
Hey, how are things in Tampa?
Fine.
Yes, don't tell me anymore. I don't want to know. What do you do there?
I work for an appraisal management company.
An appraisal management company? Appraisals need to be managed?
They definitely do.
What happens if you don't manage the appraisals? They start, running wild in the streets?
That's exactly what happens.
Wow. Scary. Well, Lauren, welcome to the show. Carl Castle right now is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to play?
Yes.
Here is your first limerick.
I say you should go with a rose, and poetry is better than prose. To seal up the thing, get a big diamond ring. I'm a planner who helps you...
compose.
Not compose.
Oh, but that was good.
That's true. It rhymes. That's good. There's a diamond ring involved. Does that help? Are you married, Lauren?
No.
Ah. If you did get married,
can I guess now?
You may.
Propose.
Propose. Yes. Very good. Propose. Ladies, did your groom propose by putting the ring in a chicken wing and feeding it to you down at Hooters? He clearly needed the services of the Exclusive Engagement Company, or a slightly less indecent proposal incorporated. These are new companies that for just around $12,000 help you plan a proposal. They'll help you hire musicians, pick a great location, and avoid classic mistakes like beginning with, "Darling, I'd like you to be my first wife."
I know that, money and taste don't always go together, but you'd think that if you had 12 grand to spend on something like this, you could probably just pull it off somehow without the help.
Just give her the 12 grand. Yes. She's going to say yes.
Probably. All right, Lauren, here is your next limerick.
At the games, the whole crowd goes hurrah for clip, clip, and buzz, buzz, and ta-da. While the freshly shorn crew of a ram and his ewe will let out a satisfied...
ah.
Ta-da!
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Ta-da! Listen to the clue, and we're not trying to be like Katharine Hepburn. Ta-da!
Bah!
Bah! Yes! The New Zealand Farmers Federation is petitioning to have sheep shearing recognized as an official Olympic sport. If you're asking why, then you're asking a really good question. Enthusiasts swear sheep shearing takes athleticism to, quote, another level. Of course, if they want to make something that ridiculous an Olympic sport, they should just put on spangly dresses and do it on ice skates.
And if when they shear the sheep, what do they use all the wool for?
Extreme knitting.
Oh, that would be nice. Oh, yeah.
Here's your last limerick.
Thick-rimmed specs, skinny pants, they're a tipster. So's a mustache that does a neat flipster. Also be quite annoyed at what others enjoy. That's what science says makes you a
hipster.
Yes, indeed. Thanks to researchers at Harvard, we now know the scientific definition of a hipster. The answer is unjustified disapproval of whatever it is your friends and peers like.
I disagree with that.
You disagree with that? Oh, that's so lame. The study observed the habits of 200 self-described hipsters, and they noticed that once a hipster discovers that his or her friends like the same band they like, they then reject that band. Upon hearing the results, though, several hipsters said they actually prefer the results from an independent study you probably haven't heard of. Carl, how did Lauren do in our quiz?
Lauren had 3 correct answers, Peter. Congratulations, Lauren. I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Yay for Lauren. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, please give us the scores.
Tom Baudet has the lead. Peter, he has 4 points. Faith Saley and Mo Rocca, they're tied for second. They both have 2 points.
All right. We flipped a coin. Faith selected to go first. Here we go. On Wednesday, the Obama administration rejected a Canadian firm's plan to build a huge blank.
The Keystone Pipeline.
Right. Critics of Wisconsin's Governor Scott Walker filed more than 1 million signatures from residents who want to blank him.
Recall him.
Yes. On Thursday, the 131-year-old film company blank filed for bankruptcy.
Kodak.
Right. After hosting for the third time last Sunday, Ricky Gervais announced he would not host the blanks again.
Golden Globes.
Right. After a 3-day stay in the hospital, a Bronx man almost had to be readmitted when he was presented with blank.
A $44 million bill.
Exactly right. It was a typo. In an effort to pull ahead of the competition, Burger King announced this week that they will begin blanking in some areas.
Delivering it your way.
Indeed. For the third year in a row, the mysterious man who's been leaving a half-empty bottle of cognac on Blank's grave failed to appear.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes. Test of their new breathalyzers. Police in Florida blanked.
Police in Florida got drunk.
Yes, they did. They spent an afternoon drinking whiskey and eating Doritos. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement had some fancy new Intoxilizer 8000s. What better way to test them than breaking out the Jim Beam and Doritos? The idea was sound. Officials say the tests did not go quite as hoped. After 4 or 5 rounds of testing, it broke down into an extended routine of good cop, naughty cop. Carl, how did Faith do in our quiz?
Faith had a perfect round, Peter. Faith had 8 correct answers for 16 more points. She now has 18 points, and she has a commanding lead.
Well done. All right, Mo, you're up next. Fill in the blank. On Monday, President Obama and his family marked blank day by volunteering for a service project.
Martin Luther King.
Yes. On Monday, John Huntsman withdrew from the presidential race and endorsed blank.
Mitt Romney.
Yes. On Tuesday, Jerry Yang, one of the co-founders of blank, resigned from all his positions at the company.
Yahoo.
Right. A bank in Germany is reevaluating its security system after police responded to alarms triggered when a blank.
Triggered when... something in Germany happened. It was some. They were triggered by a cuckoo clock? More Switzerland.
No, they were triggered when a spider sent off the bank's motion detectors. This week, the queen of Southern comfort food, Paula Deen, announced that she has been diagnosed with blank.
Diabetes.
Right. The sitcom Modern Family caused controversy this week with a storyline that featured a toddler blanking.
Cursing.
Right. New Zealand bird watchers had their dreams dashed after it was revealed the new species of hawk they'd discovered was actually blank.
An Australian in a costume.
No, they're actually regular hawks that have been spray-painted pink. Bird watchers in New Zealand were convinced the amazing new pinkish red hawks they had spotted were a new species, but when one of the hawks was spotted touching up his roots with a can of Rust-Oleum, the gig, she was up. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 points, but Faith Saley still has the lead with 18.
Well done. All right, then. How many, then, does Tom need to win?
He needs 7 correct answers to tie or 8 to win outright.
All right.
Tall order.
Yes, but you're on your home turf. This is your house. This is Michigan. You can do it. You're like the Detroit Lions for the first half of the season. You can do it. This is for the game. Rupert Murdoch's News Group newspapers have agreed to pay damages to 37 victims of the blanking scandal.
Phone hacking.
Right, because he is not on the ballot in South Carolina. This week, Stephen Colbert urged voters to send a message by voting for blank.
Herman Cain.
Yes. Standard & Poor's rankled some European leaders when it announced that it was blanking the credit ratings of 9 Eurozone countries.
Lowering.
Yes, downgrading. After hackers accessed some customer information, the online store blank urged customers to change their passwords.
Zappos.
Right, a Russian man who stole a vodka delivery truck was not charged with car theft after he told police blank.
He was Russian, it was vodka, and everybody understands.
That's what happened. He said, I wasn't stealing the truck, I was stealing the vodka inside the truck. They said, oh. Huh. There was a mixed reaction to the news that for the first time since 1945, Hitler's book, Blank, will be printed in Germany.
Mein Kampf.
Right, a billionaire history buff has donated $7.5 million to repair the cracks that appeared in the blank after last summer's earthquake.
The Liberty Bell?
The Washington Monument.
Oh, right, of course.
The Seattle man indiscriminately firing a pistol all over downtown calmed everyone's nerves when he explained he just needed to blank.
He just needed to... just get rid of some ammunition.
No, he just needed to test his gun. Huh. Residents called police when they spotted the man indiscriminately firing his gun at trees, the ground, at buildings, and into the air. When police stopped him, he explained he just wanted to make sure his pistol still worked. Yep, it works, he said, just before he was arrested. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers to tie, but Tom had 6 correct answers. So with 18 points, Faith Saley is this week's champion.
There you go.
Well done, Faith.
Thank you. That was pure luck.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what will be the next job for Italian cruise ship captain Francesco Scatino. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership, more at houselogic.com/homeownership, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world, more information at macfound.org, and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, which monitors mileage and safe driving habits to determine a personalized rate. Learn more at progressive.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, benevolent overlord, an insufferable elitist. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to the crew of the beautiful Fox Theater in Detroit. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will the cruise captain do next? Mo Rocca.
He'll find comfort and luxury in an open marriage with Silvio Berlusconi.
Faith Saley.
With his permatan and Italian roots, he'll join another sinking ship, the cast of the Jersey Shore. They already have the situation, now they'll have the disembarkation.
Tom Baudette.
He'll be advising Rick Santorum on the smoothest way to abandon his presidential bid.
Well, if the captain does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Faith Saley, Tom Baudette. Thanks to everyone at Michigan Radio and WDET, our two sponsors in Detroit. Thanks to our wonderful audience at the Fox Theater. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.
And celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
At Goodwill Industries of Middle Tennessee and its 17 Career Solution Centers located throughout Middle and West Tennessee, and through generous donations of gently used items, career counselors work one-on-one with thousands of Tennesseans to provide job search, computer training, and employment services to clients from all backgrounds who are in need of a job or encouragement and guidance in their search. Career counselors also work with employers and community partners to identify job-ready candidates. Learn more at goodwillcareersolutions.org.
Nashville weather for this afternoon, a 20% chance of showers and cloudy skies in the high and lower 60s. Right now, it